The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
She's got the news. She talks with newsmakers. She encourages us to laugh, and she cries with us. Speaking truth to power and questioning authority daily, it's the Nicole Sandler Show.
And it's a Monday. Welcome to it. Oh, yes. I am Nicole Sandler, coming to you live at NicoleSandler.com and, you know, all those other usual regular places. Still not on YouTube. I'm fighting it with everything I've got. But, yeah, YouTube is still not playing with us. I don't know what it is. And you can't get through to a human being at YouTube or their parent company, Google, but I am working on it. In the meantime, we are streaming live on Facebook Live, on Periscope, which is Twitter's streaming thing. Paul, who's been working with me, has been helping me get set up on Twitch, and I thought I had it figured it out, but I didn't. So I don't think we're on Twitch today unless Paul is listening and gets that going. But, you know, it's a work in progress. Such as it is. It is a Monday, and that means, well, I'm still trying to get my bearings back from the weekend. Weekends are times when we're supposed to de-stress, but this was kind of a stressful weekend. Well, all weekends are stressful here in Florida because
we're number one, damn it!
Yeah, we're the coronavirus capital of the world. Hi, aren't we lucky here in Florida? And this weekend, we were warned that a hurricane was coming our way. Now, you might notice that on Friday, I didn't mention anything about the hurricane. Nothing whatsoever, because I didn't think it was going to be hitting us. And sure enough, it really didn't. It was here. Kinda. It skirted. Where do I have sound coming from? It went up the East Coast, but stayed offshore. We got nothing. We have worse weather today than we had on Saturday when the storm was allegedly hitting us. So we knock on wood, laminate. We got lucky there. Hopefully it stays offshore and doesn't bother anybody in the Carolinas, where it may hit today. It may go up north. It may hit New York again, or it could, you know, turn right and go out to sea, which hopefully it will, because the last thing we need when we're dealing with the COVID-19 is a direct hit from a hurricane. But, you know, the season is young. It is only August 3rd. So, hey, welcome to it. So I'm going to start today with a subject that I broached slightly last week. And let me tell you, I mean, the phone lines are open. Should you care to weigh in, you can. You don't have to wait for me to invite your phone calls. During the first half hour of the show, when I'm not doing an interview, you're welcome to call in pretty much any time. Doesn't mean I'll necessarily answer the call, but I might. And I don't have a screener. So if you call in, just know I may take your call. And I can only do, you know, one at a time, because I don't have a call screener. But anyway. So last week I started telling you about, on the phone number is 954-889-6410. Should you care to call in, or you can Skype in. I'm simply Nicole Sandler, all one word. All right. So that aside, last week I got onto the subject of one of my many frustrations about Donald Trump is the double standard that is used when it's about him. If any other president, any president in history spoke the way he does, throws around insults, breaks norms, demeans the office, and to put it simply, lies. If any other president lied the way he did, I don't believe they would survive. But for some reason, they all seem to be afraid of calling him out. Case in point, let's start with Nancy Pelosi. Now, she's the one who's not afraid to call him out. And she does. And because of that, we're witnessing something that we'd never seen before. And that is a Speaker of the House and a president who have not spoken in person, except for their little not very friendly greeting at the State of the Union address back in, was it January? I think it was January. Since that last meeting in the Oval Office where he insulted her, she basically told him to fuck off and she walked out. Yes. But I say good for her because she's not playing his game. So yesterday on one of the Sunday shows, she actually called out Dr. Birx, Dr. Debbie Birx, who you and I know always knew from the moment she first appeared on television was a bit of a Trumper. Right. She just wasn't quite there with the objective information. There was just something a little off about her. So yesterday, I think it was on Meet the Press, but I could be wrong. Nancy Pelosi said this.
I think the president is spreading disinformation about the virus, and she is his appointee. So I don't have confidence there. No.
So I don't have confidence in her. No. Well, she was called out over that. And then today on CNN, she was asked to clarify. And the question was something along the lines of, why do you have no faith in Dr. Birx? And here's what Nancy Pelosi said.
What happened is that we had a conversation about how we stopped the virus. And when we did, they were making contentions about how tracing isn't a valuable thing. We shouldn't do it. I said, well, that's not what most scientists say.
Right.
And they said, well, we'll bring a scientist to say that. I said, well, sure, it's not Dr. Birx, because I don't have confidence in anyone who stands there while the president says, swallow Lysol and cure your virus. You know, you'll kill you and you won't have the virus anymore.
That's right.
I'm not have confidence in somebody when the president says it's a hoax, it's magic, it's going to go away by magic, it's a miracle, and all of those things. So,
so you're saying
I don't
hasn't challenged his disinformation?
Well, she's
still
there. I think that she has enabled, but it's not about her. It's about the American people.
Okay, so there's Nancy Pelosi saying she has enabled him. Anybody who stands by, she's a medical doctor. She's the allegedly the head doctor on the White House coronavirus task force, and she stood by while he suggested the American people inject bleach, disinfectant to kill the virus. And she didn't go screaming, no, don't do that. She stood by and sort of, you know, covered for him. Again, any other president who would make such a ridiculous, dangerous, outlandish statement such as, can we look into that with DC about ingesting a disinfectant? She was in the room when it happened. And she didn't say anything. There were some nonverbal cues that made us go, okay, she's a little uncomfortable here. But she never did anything. She didn't act on it. And so, therefore, I don't trust her either. So there's that. And then there's this. It was 2 weeks ago yesterday that Donald Trump sat for that interview with Chris Wallace on Fox so-called news. You know Fox so-called news. It's not really news. It's, well, it's Fox.
Your original source for fake news. Fox News. We make shit up.
Well, they do, and they always have. I've offered them that little sweeper, but they still haven't taken me up on it. I wouldn't even charge them for it. Anyway, back to this. So 2 weeks ago, Donald Trump had that interview with Chris Wallace, who is the only somewhat capable journalist over there, I think. I don't spend much time watching the Fox, but from what I've heard. Anyway, so it was then during that interview that Chris Wallace asked the man pretending to be president why he would bend over backwards in the middle of a global pandemic to kill off what's left of the Affordable Care Act. And here's what Dump said.
Since the pandemic hit, millions of people have lost their jobs and thereby lost their health insurance. And almost 500,000 have signed up for Obamacare. Your administration just announced that you're signing on to a lawsuit to overturn Obamacare.
And replace it.
Why does it make sense to overturn Obamacare,
which
people now are relying on? Democrats are going to say the man who's wanted to kill Obamacare is going to take away the protection for pre-existing conditions.
First of all, we got rid of the individual mandate. Pre-existing conditions will always be taken care of by me and Republicans, 100%.
But you've been in office 3.5 years. You don't have a plan.
Well, we haven't had. Excuse me. Yesterday, we're signing a health care plan within 2 weeks.
2 weeks?
A full and complete health care plan that the Supreme Court decision on DACA gave me the right to do. So we're going to solve.
What?
We're going to sign an immigration plan, a health care plan, and various other plans.
Really?
And nobody will have done what I'm doing in the next 4 weeks.
Why?
The Supreme Court gave the President of the United States powers that nobody thought the President had. By doing what they did, their decision on DACA.
Bullshit.
And DACA is going to be taken care of also.
Bullshit.
We're getting rid of it because we're going to replace it with something much better.
Bullshit.
But we got rid of already, which was most of Obamacare, the individual mandate. And that I've already won on. And we won also on the Supreme Court. But the decision by the Supreme Court on DACA allows me to do things on immigration, on health care, on other things that we've never done before. And you find it to be a very exciting 2 weeks.
A very exciting 2 weeks. So guess what? Yesterday was 2 weeks. The 2 weeks are up. So where is his signed bill? First of all, there is no bill. You can't just conjure a health care bill up out of thin air and sign it when it hasn't gone through Congress yet. Presidents don't make law. Congress does that. He lies. He lies with impunity about every fucking thing. The man can't open his mouth without lying. So we should all be all over the place. Every question today for Trump should have been, it's been 2 weeks. You promised us 2 weeks ago that within 2 weeks, you'd have a signed replacement plan for the Affordable Care Act that you're still going to the Supreme Court trying to do away with. I mean, it's bad enough that they didn't do a special enrollment period to let millions of people who lost their health insurance because they lost their jobs because we're in a pandemic sign on and buy insurance through the exchange so they could get health care through the Affordable Care Act. No, he wouldn't do that. Of course not. Wouldn't have a special enrollment period. But on top of it, he says, never fear. Within 2 weeks, we'll have a replacement. Well, it's been 2 weeks. Where's your replacement? I'm still waiting. Where could that replacement be? Because he lies. He lies about everything.
What you're seeing and what you're reading is not what's happening.
Yeah. So wake up and smell the crap coming from the Oval Office, because that's what it is. How does the press let him get away with this? I know what happens. You see, so today he's talking to, I don't know who was in, it was someone from CNN, was in the Oval Office. They had a little press pool spray. You know, there's only like one or two reporters allowed in there. And so one of them from CNN, let me see if I can't find it, was asking him, asked him about why so many members of the coronavirus task force are correcting his misinformation. You know, they're like Deborah Birx is finally stepping out and saying, well, what he's saying isn't necessarily right. And here's what he said. Whoops. Here we go.
Can you explain why so many of the public health experts on the coronavirus task force are contradicting you on things like why the virus is so widespread in this country?
Good question.
The efficacy of hydroxychloroquine.
Yes, good
why
question.
Why are so many of these people on your task force contradicting you?
Well, I think we're doing a great job. I think
that wasn't the question.
Vaccines.
I know you think you're doing a great job.
You'll be seeing that very soon.
Oh, please.
I think we're, when you look at a map, this is a map of the, I've sort of shown that around a little bit, but that's the red is the area of most concern.
pretty recent.
He's showing a map again. It might as well be the map of the, you know, 2016 Electoral College map.
People that in a lot of areas that have gotten very, you know, better very fast.
All right.
Hydroxy.
All right. So I'm sorry. I don't want to salt your ears with that because he just continues lying. And then he says, and then he goes into, well, it's CNN, fake news. Because that's his only answer. When someone disagrees with him, that's when it's fake. That's when they're not real. That's when they're like, you know, everything about this man. I know we've got, you know, less than 3 months till Election Day. And boy, do we have our work cut out for us. And by the way, you can vote by mail. All right. I like to start the show with something funny. Obviously, I started with a little bit of a rant because I was pissed. But let's turn it over to our friend Lauren Mayer for just a couple of minutes, because voter fraud. Well, what does she say about voter fraud? Voter fraud is a fraud. Here's Lauren Mayer with a little tune for today. Take it away, Lauren. Whoops. Where is it? Why am I not hearing it? Uh-oh. Oh,
safer
that would help.
Would be a no-brainer and nonpartisan too. But some folks are raising objections, giving reasons that are seriously flawed, trotting out that same old tired myth. But voter fraud is a fraud. Just mention mail-in ballots and expanded early voting. The very thought makes most Republicans' heads start exploding, especially some of the ones who vote by mail themselves, which seems just a little bit odd. Voter suppression is a real problem, but mail-in voter fraud is a fraud. These types of ID laws discriminate. There's evidence to confirm it. And why can't you use a student ID, but you can use a gun permit? Red states are making voting harder, which should be outlawed. And it was till they gutted the Voting Rights Act in the name of something that's really unlikely. 'Cause voter fraud is a fraud. Let's do the numbers, shall we? For example, you're more likely to win the lottery or be struck by lightning, or to be elected president, which these days is frightening, or to give birth to quadruplets, or win an Olympic gold medal, or to be hurt by a pogo stick or an exploding Rachel Ray tea kettle. Being attacked by a shark is more likely, also flying to the moon. Being canonized or being killed by a vending machine or balloon, or by flammable pajamas, or mad cow disease. Voter fraud is less likely than all of these. Such ludicrous excuses this argument is made of, which makes you think which part of democracy are they afraid of? Disenfranchising hundreds of thousands, trampling on rights so roughshod. Yeah. When restrictions are so broad, we can see through the facade of this right-wing goon squad as they shamelessly maraud, till we're all left slack-jawed saying, oh my God, voter fraud is a fraud. Yeah.
Lauren Mayer, everyone. Lauren Mayer. You get her at laurenmayer.com. Of course, she's on Twitter and Facebook and YouTube and all that. And she's quite prolific and very talented. And voter fraud is a fraud. Because it's not real, in case you're wondering. All right. We got some news to get to. I'll tell you what. Let's take a very quick time out for our friends at the Progressive Voices Network and come back on the other side with what's news. Because we can. So here we go. All right. So while there, I hope, in that break, you know, I should save this for them because everyone needs to hear this. You know what? I'll just give it to you guys. Progressive Voices, they're lost. They should be listening at NicoleSandler.com. So, you know, I didn't get to see much of the John Lewis funeral live last week because I was busy working, Yeah, it was Friday and I was working. And so I watched some bits and pieces over the weekend. And I got to tell you, I was a little discouraged over the fact that, well, what I heard Bill Clinton say. You know, I thought Obama was great. And for all the right wingers who were screaming, Obama brought politics into John Lewis's memorial service. John Lewis was about politics, and everything Barack Obama said could have easily come out of John Lewis's mouth. However, what Bill Clinton said would not have. Here's a little bit of what Bill Clinton said during the service on Friday. Oh, no, it's not going to work that way. Hold on. I got to do this, maybe? No, it won't work. Shoot. Okay, hold on. So the people, sorry, anyone watching the video heard it, but I'm going to play it for you a different way. Let me see. Can I do it this way? I can do it this way. Here, let me just play. This is Bill Clinton at the memorial service Friday.
For with the stroke of a hand, ending an intra-family fight within our party.
Oh, sorry, that echo was kind of cool, though. He thanked Jim Clyburn for, with the stroke of a hand, ended the intra-party fighting. And then that creepy laugh. Basically, Bill Clinton, at John Lewis's funeral, thanked Jim Clyburn for kicking Bernie Sanders out of the race. That's not how John Lewis worked. And that was unfair. That was not right for Bill Clinton to say and do during John Lewis's memorial service. I know. Look, it's not my, you know, thing. It's not my fight, although kind of is because I'm an American. And I just think that was uncalled for. There are still lots of raw feelings out here. And it's not okay. That said, Bernie Sanders was on Velshi yesterday morning with Ali Velshi. And he was really great, as he always is. And Ali Velshi did a very fine job with him. And here was Bernie talking about the need to defeat Donald Trump.
I think people who voted for me, people who support the progressive movement, understand that the next 3 months are maybe, Ali, the most important 3 months in the modern history of this country, and that all of us are going to have to come together and work in a way that we have never worked before.
That's true.
To have the largest voter turnout in the history of this country, to make sure that all of the votes are counted, and that we send Donald Trump packing and elect Joe Biden. The future of American democracy is at stake.
It is.
We have a president in the White House now who doesn't believe in science. And we are unnecessarily seeing thousands of people die as a result. So we have an economy, as you've just indicated, which is in tatters for working people while the billionaires become richer. This is a moment for us to come together and to defeat Donald Trump. And I will do everything that I can to make that happen.
All right. We're going to bring progressive voices back because I see they're in promos.
You're listening to The Nicole Sandler Show on Progressive Voices and NicoleSandler.com.
All right. So hopefully our friends from Progressive Voices are back. Let me play you one more clip. I played one already from Bernie Sanders on Ali Velshi's show yesterday. Here's one more talking about working with Joe Biden to move the country in the direction we needed to go.
It is true that many of our supporters are younger people, non-traditional voters, and it is absolutely imperative that they come out and vote. And I just want to say one thing. No great secret that Joe Biden and I disagree on a number of issues. That's a fact.
But what we are engaged
in now is what we call coalition politics. We're going to fight out our differences after Biden is elected.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Right now, the immediate task is to come together to defeat Trump. And then, as progressives, we're going to do everything that we can to make the Biden administration the most progressive administration that it can become. But right now, my message to our supporters, hey, not only you get out to vote, vote early, but get your friends, your co-workers, your co-students out to vote as well.
get them out to vote as well. It is that important. Meanwhile, okay, one more news story before we move into our Monday music segment. And this from the New York Times. They reported on this, but there a new federal court filing from the Manhattan District Attorney's Office seeking to get Donald Trump to comply with a subpoena for his tax returns. Yeah, well, it's back again, and Trump is trying to dismiss it, misinterpreting how the Supreme Court ruled. Let me read to you from the New York Times. They write. The Manhattan DA's office suggested today that it has been investigating Trump and his company for possible bank and insurance fraud, a significantly broader inquiry than the prosecutors have acknowledged in the past. They did not directly identify the focus of their inquiry, but said that, quote, undisputed news reports last year about Trump's business practices make it clear that the office had a legal basis for the subpoena. The reports, including investigations into Trump's wealth or lack thereof, and an article on the congressional testimony of his former lawyer and fixer, Michael Cohen, said that the president may have illegally inflated his net worth and the value of his properties to lenders and insurers. Lawyers for Trump said he did nothing wrong. Right. Well, on CNN today, legal analyst Ellie Honig said, any way you got it, this is bad news for Trump. He said, it shows me the Manhattan DA and his prosecutors are focused and they're serious. They're not just poking around, seeing what they can find in terms of financial records. They're looking at specific crimes. It's important that they're looking at more than just the hush money payments. So that's going on. Keeping that in mind, know that Donald Trump is a crook and he will lie, cheat and steal and do anything necessary to remain in office, because he knows that should he be booted from office, well, then he'll most likely go to jail where he belongs. So just know, as Bernie said in that other clip I played, the next 3 months are going to be among the most important of our lives. All right. So you know why I started doing these Monday music segments. It's because we all need mental health breaks. For me, you know, I love to go to the beach. Can't, because I'm still social distancing and I'm staying safely at home because, frankly, I don't want to get the COVID and I'm not ready to die yet. So for me, my escape is music. We all have different escapes. I just hope to share some of mine with you. So I take a portion of the show each Monday and we get musical with it. What I've been doing for the last couple of months, 2.5 months now, is calling on mostly people that I know from the past, but some that I'm just meeting. Today, well, we go back to my past for another edition of Monday Music.
We could all use some healing these days, so we turn to the power of music. Each Monday, we welcome another artist to share some songs and stories as the Nicole Sandler Show presents the Monday Music Sunset Sessions.
Our next guest is somebody that I first met, oh boy, Kevin, it's got to be 25 years ago. I'm bringing out all my oldies but goodies from the past. Kevin Montgomery released his debut album on A&M Records. It was called Fear Nothing. I have a very rare copy here because I'm guessing this is probably out of print these days, isn't it, Kevin?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. And it probably burned, the original probably burned in that Universal fire. Do you remember hearing about that?
Yes, all the masters that Universal had all burned. They were supposed to be safeguarding it, and just decades worth of pristine master tapes of so many brilliant albums gone forever.
Gone, that we don't even know about, you know. I mean, they haven't really talked about the list of all those records, but...
That's horrible. So you weren't even informed whether or not your masters exist anywhere?
No.
Wow.
I don't think they were taking very good care of them anyway, because I had an A&R guy that was going to go in and grab it back for me. And he went in there to get it, and he said I couldn't even find it. He said there was just like... there were piles and piles of master tapes just piled on top of each other that were just sitting there. And he said, I tried to find it, but there's no way to find it. Literally hundreds.
Yeah, it's just horrible. Anyway, what a way to start. Kevin Montgomery is a singer-songwriter.
Yes.
What's that?
We're going to be positive.
Yes, yes, we are. So singer-songwriter, you're from Nashville, right, originally, but now you're living in the UK. How long have you been over there?
I've been here about 16 years. I was born in Nashville, born and raised, one of the very few people. My parents moved to Nashville in 1960. Just after Buddy Holly passed away, I think it was about 6 months or a year after that they went ahead and moved to Nashville.
And I should explain that the reference to Buddy Holly certainly makes sense in your life because your dad was Joe Montgomery, who was one of the Crickets. Yes. Bob Montgomery, who was one of Buddy Holly's Crickets, and so he was actually
before the Crickets. He and Buddy grew up playing guitar together, and in fact, that photo right there is a never released photo of my dad and Buddy when they were probably, I don't know, 12, 13, 14 years old at Echo McGuire's birthday party. And Buddy's playing the mandolin and my dad's playing the acoustic. But they learned how to play guitar together, and Dad wrote songs like Heartbeat, Wishing, Love's Made a Fool of You, Down the Line, on and on. They were a duo.
So it's in your blood. You grew up with music. This has been part of your life for your whole life, yeah?
Yeah, I interviewed my mom recently about, I'm doing a documentary about my dad, and I interviewed my mom, who, she had a career as a singer, too. She sang with Elvis on Suspicious Minds, In the Ghetto, Kentucky Rain, and on thousands of other records. But she said they got married on a Thursday night. A Thursday, they're in Littlefield, Texas, so that they could be in Nashville on Saturday night for the Grand Ole Opry. So they honeymooned in Nashville, got married on Thursday night and then hightailed it all the way. And in those days, it wasn't, like a big highway like that. It was be a two-lane across the country, and they got to Nashville just in time for the Grand Ole Opry on Saturday night.
Wow. What great stories. And I know you've got tons of them. I was looking at your website, kevinmontgomery.com, and your about me is filled with just wonderful memories. So we'll get to some of that. You've got a guitar in hand. Why don't we start with a song? What do you want to play for us first?
Okay. I'll play a song off the last record called Some Comfort.
Okay.
There's a good story about the video. It's up on YouTube. The girl that was in my first video, I don't know if you remember Red-Blooded American Boy.
Sure. It's on this very CD, Fear Nothing. Yeah, that came out when? What
was this? 1993.
It's copyright 93. When I played your music on the radio in LA, that station signed on the air July of 94. So you were... Yeah, so that's how long ago it was, yeah.
The girl that was in the first video, she found me on Facebook, and then I had her appear in this video 20 years later. And
wow.
She looks a lot better, and I look a lot worse. But I'll play it for you now. So this is Some Comfort. 1, 2, 3, 4.
Into your eyes. some comfort. That's what I want. You spend your life working, running round in circles like a mother will. Soul feels like it's still. That's some comfort. That's what I want. That's some comfort. That's what you want. I can feel the days taking flight. For you I'm thankful, for I know that I was truly loved in this life. That's some comfort.
Some comfort. That was beautiful. Kevin Montgomery. That's off your last album?
Yes, the last record, which titled Some Comfort.
Oh, a title track. Awesome. Now, you are in the process of working on a new album. And to do this, I think you did for the last one as well. You're doing a crowdfunding thing. Times have changed in the last 20 years, huh?
I know. It's... Yeah, I'm doing a crowdfunding thing on the new record that I'm titling at the moment, Good Thing. The last record I crowdfunded, and it's one of those things when I made that first record. Well, I moved to LA when I was 22. Got the deal when I was 23 with A&M.
Wow.
Then we made the record, and I started writing it from the time I was like 19 to 23 years old. And so that was my debut record. And now it's like I made Some Comfort, the last record, about 8 years ago. And I was like, man, I wish that I'd had that big machine behind this record, because I think I've had a lifetime, to live, to write that record. I don't know. You're not going to write with the same depth, when you're 19, 23 years old.
Oh, of course not. You have a different life experience. I mean, the world is a different place. So I look at albums like a snapshot in time. Fear Nothing is where you were when you were 23 years old, right?
Yes.
Talk about what happened. Kevin Monk.
And I'm proud of it.
And it's a wonderful record. But now, here you are a quarter of a century later.
Well, I'll tell you what, you guys breathed life, when you were there at the radio station there in L.A. It's funny because when you guys added, I think you started playing a song called I Want You, that added probably another 6 months to my record deal when you guys started playing it, because all of a sudden the label is hearing the music on the radio in that town, you know, so that really helped things for a while. And
that was the very cool thing about being on the air in L.A. at that time. It was the mid 90s. And this format, AAA, it was called Adult Album Alternative. We were the only ones playing new music, playing new artists, breaking new artists. I mean, around the time when, you know, your record came out, it was Sheryl Crow's first album was out. Dave Matthews Band had their first album out. So many of those artists, we opened the door. Once we broke them, then the other stations started playing them. But I think it added to the success of this AAA format, which, you know, is still out there. But there again, there's only a handful of stations doing it, and everything's so fractionalized now. But it was a special period in time, I think, for music.
Absolutely, 100%. Because it's kind of gone half downhill since then. But you know, but yeah, I mean, when you're there in LA. And everybody wants to be in LA. I mean, it's you can make things happen. You can create things, and it. I mean, you have the ability to influence, and that must have been a great feeling. You know, it was you influenced my career. That's for sure.
Oh wow! Well, thank you. So, what happened? You had this record on A&M. You were the hot new kid on the big label. So you did the first record, you had moderate success with it, and then what happened?
I probably have to take some responsibility. I think the business just happened. They decided that they wanted me to do a record, more of a country record, for the Nashville wing of A&M. I just asked off the deal.
Wow.
And then I got out of the deal, signed a deal with Decca Records, because I got to know them when I did the Not Fade Away Remembering Buddy Holly record. I sang with Mary Chapin Carpenter on that record. Signed a thing with them, and then 6 months later, they closed down. And then, you know, I was just working, doing regular jobs. I found myself back in Nashville just doing, you know, everything from valet parking to all this stuff. You know, some good things happened while I was there. I got a song recorded by Martina McBride on her Evolution record while I was pushing carts in the parking lot of Sam's. I saw her producer, Paul Worley, came into the parking lot and said, "Hey, what are you doing here?" Because he was kind of like my mentor. And I said, "Well, I'm just trying to make a living." And I said, "What are you doing?" He said, "I'm producing the new Martina McBride record." And I said, "Well, I want to come play you a song." So a couple weeks later, I went up to his office and played him a song called "I Won't Close My Eyes." It was on the first record, my first record, and she recorded it, and that sold 4 million copies. So,
ooh,
that was good. But then I decided to make my own records, because every time I'd play in Nashville, people from London would show up and England would show up. So I knew they'd played my video quite a bit in the UK and in Europe when they had what they call CMT Europe. And so I made a record and then started touring in the UK in April of 2000. And I never really stopped.
You've been doing an online series from your dining room on Facebook Live. This is how a lot of artists are keeping up their performing chops, and in lieu of being able to go out on tour and play a club date, sketch you in front of people. You can open up tip jars so they can help replace some of the revenue you're losing from not being able to tour, right? So how often do you do these live from your living or your dining room shows on Facebook?
Well, I started doing them in like 2009. But you know, I didn't do them for a few years, and I stayed away from doing it during the beginning of the lockdown and everything, because I just thought, you know, everybody's doing this. And then when I decided to do the new record, I thought, you know, I'm going to do a live stream and just kind of announce it. And I had such a good time in it, and interacting with my friends and them requesting songs and just making jokes. And, you know, I loved it. So I decided to do it every week, every Sunday at 8:30 London time, so 2:30 Central, and on and on. And I do it on my Facebook page, and I don't have Kevin Montgomery as my Facebook page. It's Kevin Montgomery with an E-S. Kevin Montgomery, yes. So Kevin Montgomery, okay. E-S.
Ah, good to know.
But yeah, I started doing that, and then I started bringing in guests. Like, I'm your guest today. I had Robert Reynolds, who played bass in the Mavericks, on. And then I had Gary Talent from the E Street Band.
You did. And that was wonderful. That was great.
And then last week I had Jude Johnston, who was wonderful. She had a great story about writing a song, Wounded Heart. She wrote for Bonnie Raitt. And she had a great story it's just brilliant. I thought, you know what, people ain't gonna want to see me sing my songs every single week. So I need to bring in a guest, have them sing a couple songs. And I've really, really enjoyed it. And you mentioned Peter Himmelman. I got to give a shout out to him because I went on a 70-city tour with Peter.
Wow.
And that was pretty much where I learned everything I know about live performing. Because that guy
he's a wonderful entertainer.
It's so funny because no one knows. I mean, the average person has no idea about him. But when I toured with him, we sold out two nights at the Vic in Chicago, which is a 2,000 seater. So he's Orthodox, so he doesn't play on Friday night. So we sold out a Thursday and sold out the Saturday night, 2,000 seats, Madison Theater, the State Theater, 2,000. But then we go to St. Louis and play for 150 people. You know, so it was that kind of tour. But we played in San Francisco and 1,500 people showed up. And the guy's brilliant. I opened up for him acoustically, so it was me and the acoustic guitar in front of 2,000 people. And then I would watch him every single night. And the guy is, I would say his comedic wit is on the level of, you know, he kind of reminded me of a Robin Williams.
Wow.
How he could just pick stuff out of the air. And I saw him do crazy things. He had, one time he had at the WOW Music Hall in Eugene, Oregon, he had 300 people laying on their backs doing breathing exercises during the show. I mean, it's just crazy stuff.
I've known him to take an entire audience outside. It's like, let's get out of here. Let's go outside and take the whole audience outside and do some songs out there. That he always pushes the envelope, and he's still doing it. And, you know, that's one of the reasons why I wanted to do this show, to bring some of these artists back who, you know, the masses may not know them, but they are making great music like you that are out there that are doing this. And again, you know, the kind of radio that I did, music radio I did, is sort of like the kind of talk radio I do. It's a niche format. I mean, playing a lot of artists that people don't know to expose them to a wider audience. There's so much great music, and now there's so much more of it than 25 years ago, and it's harder to break through because we're so fragmented. It used to be you had the radio, and then there was MTV back when they played music. And now there are so many ways to turn, and radio is not breaking new music. So you got to find it another way. And again, I've said this many times, selfishly, the main reason I started doing this is because music is so important to us. It's healing. It's got healing properties. And right now, I think we all need some of that musical healing.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I started listening to Jackson Brown, like a lot lately, just to kind of soothe my soul a little bit, you know, because otherwise it can drive you crazy.
Absolutely. Hey, Kevin, we've been talking a while. How about doing another song for us?
In mid-sip.
All right, so this song is called Cherokee City, and I'm going to send this out to all the songwriters out there.
Thank you. Beautiful. Cherokee City, Kevin Montgomery, playing live for us on Monday Music on the Nicole Sandler Show. It's awesome. It's so good to hear you perform. You know, we've lost touch, obviously, over the years, but I've kept, you know, an eye on you. And I know that, again, you're living in the UK these days, but you do come back over here regularly. And you've done this tour a number of times that I've watched from afar. You do 50 states in 50 days. Around that's grueling work, isn't it?
Yeah, I did 450 states on 50 days. Wow. Tours and basically did house concerts or a concert and each state along the way. And I did it to highlight teens aging out of foster care, kids aging out of foster care. And
oh, nice.
Yeah, that's a big problem.
Oh, it's a huge problem. I don't know if you know that. Yeah, I adopted my daughter from Kazakhstan, not domestically, but I did that right before I left L.A. She just turned 21. So,
oh, wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I mean, there's a big need for that. And what I found is that if you ask, this is how the listener out there can help. Okay, so... if you go to my YouTube channel, which is, you know, just find me on YouTube. I interviewed people in each state, someone who had aged out of foster care, and I put the interviews up on YouTube. And so I would play the show, and then I had to find someone to interview that night or that day. You can find somebody every single time. I found somebody, even if I had to drive an hour out to some log cabin at 1 a.m. I would find somebody to interview for this thing. So it was grueling, but most of the kids would say, when I said to them, "Who is the most important person in your life?" and they would say, "My CASA." A CASA is a court-appointed special advocate. Right. And they're not paid. They're volunteers. So there might be, you know, it's someone who cares about kids and wants to be their advocate in front of the judge.
Wow.
So and they're not paid by the state. So the kids trust them because they don't have to be there. And so if you're listening and you want to get involved with that kind of situation, that would be a good avenue. Court-appointed special advocate, CASA.
Wow. CASA. Wow. I didn't even know that existed, but that's good to know. That's wonderful. So, Kevin, you spent your time, you're producing artists, you're still writing and recording songs. We mentioned earlier you've got a crowdfunding. You're on Indiegogo to finance the new record that you're working on now. How can people find you there? Just go on Indiegogo and look for Kevin Montgomery?
Indiegogo.com and then Kevin Montgomery, Good Thing.
Yeah. So, Kevin Montgomery, how about doing one more song for us before we say goodbye?
Okay, so this is Lovely Day off the forthcoming record.
It's such a lovely day when I'm with you. Doesn't matter where we go or say or do. Thank you.
Lovely day. Kevin Montgomery from the forthcoming album, Good Things, that we can all participate in because you're now you're in the middle of recording it. You're doing it all yourself. Or how do you work it? Do you have other band members in other places record their parts? Or are you doing it all?
Well, we haven't started recording yet. So eventually I'll go to Nashville and record it in the studio. And if you know, we're still in a weird phase, then I may do remote recording, you know, where, like, for instance, Matt Rollins, who plays on my records, piano player, he has a home studio. So we may send out the track to him and have him add his part there, you know, and it would be completely beautiful, whatever he adds. So we may do it that way. So we haven't started recording it yet. I'm just trying to raise the funds.
Awesome. Okay, well, people can participate at Indiegogo. It's so nice to catch up with you and to see you again after all these years. Kevin Montgomery, again, your Facebook page. Now, the page for your music is Kevin Montgomery S-E, you said?
No, E-S. So E-S. Basically, yes, at the end of the
Kevin Montgomery, yes. Montgomery, got it. Now,
yeah, I couldn't get Kevin Montgomery. Oh, actually, no, I have Kevin Montgomery. That's my personal
page.
So if you go to there, that's me. But then the fan page is just add an E on and an S on the end of my name.
And the page to watch your live streams that you're doing on Sundays?
Oh, yes. That's where you can see it.
Okay. I will make sure.
On my Facebook page. But yeah, I love what you're doing, Nicole. It's great to see you. And isn't it amazing that we can do this from home now?
It's so cool. And the thing is, you know, we're all isolating, but I think in many ways like this, it's brought a lot of us together. And the fact that you're over there in London and I'm in South Florida and we could do this is wonderful. So there are silver linings to every bad situation. And we're in a pretty bad situation right now, but this has definitely been a wonderful silver lining.
Yeah. Thank you. It's for me, too.
Thank you.
And with that, we are done. Thanks, everyone, for listening. I'll see you tomorrow right here on The Nicole Sandler Show at NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network. Bye, everyone.